From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our special guest on this edition of the program is Alan J. Lichtman, Distinguished Professor of History at American University here in Washington. Alan, of course, is no stranger to these VOA microphones. A well-known analyst of U.S. elections and the U.S. political system, Alan Lichtman has appeared frequently to discuss political issues such as the election and subsequent impeachments of former President Donald J. Trump, as well as racial justice protests in the wake of the murder of George Floyd. Professor Lichtman was one of the few analysts who predicted both Trump's electoral victory in 2016 and his subsequent impeachment. Alan Lichtman is the author of many acclaimed books on U.S. politics and political history, such as Predicting the Next President, The Keys to the White House, White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, The Case for Impeachment, and Repeal the Second Amendment, The Case for a Safer America, to name just a few. On this edition of the program, we'll talk with Professor Lichtman about the politics and national security concerns surrounding an FBI search of former President Trump's residence in Mar-a-Lago, Florida, for any presidential records that he and his team may have improperly removed from the White House in violation of the Presidential Records Act. The search warrant was approved by a judge and lists the codes of three U.S. laws that may have been violated, including the Espionage Act. Reuters says that a property receipt unsealed by the court shows FBI agents took 11 sets of classified records from the estate. We will elicit Alan Lichtman's views about a number of other political issues, including his predictions for the November 2022 midterms and possibly the 2024 presidential elections. And Alan Lichtman joins us via Zoom. Alan, welcome to the program.
My great pleasure.
Let's start with the search of Trump's estate at Mar-a-Lago. Many media outlets and others are calling this an unprecedented search. There's no question about it, but these are unprecedented circumstances. We have a president who allegedly took classified and even unclassified documents. It doesn't matter. All of the documents from the White House belong to the American people. He took them to the estate. Some were recovered through negotiations, but the Justice Department found that there were others there. And therefore, there was this so-called unprecedented search, because it seems like Mr. Trump has been really an unprecedented president, as we know, having incited the January 6th insurrection. He still doesn't recognize the fact that he lost the 2020 election. So let me get your take on the valid search based on a warrant which was approved by a judge, and that the Espionage Act may be in play.
Yeah, there's a lot there to unpack. First of all, let me say you're absolutely right. It was unprecedented in the sense that no ex-president has been the recipient of a warrant raising probable cause of several criminal violations. This is serious. It's never happened before. But on the other hand, there's nothing unprecedented about this warrant. As you point out, it is an absolutely legal warrant signed by a judge, and there are countless thousands of such warrants served every year. What I find astounding here is the responses of Trump supporters. These are folks who didn't blink an eye with that horrible failed no-knock warrant that killed Breonna Taylor. Didn't bother them one bit. Yet here's a perfectly legal warrant. No one got so much as a scratch on their finger, and they're saying it's the greatest outrage in history. And this pro-police crowd is saying, you know, destroy the most important police force in America, the FBI, headed, by the way, by a Trump appointee, not a Biden appointee. Let me also say this whole issue of classification. You know, Trump has, as always, totally changing his story. First, he says, I didn't bring any classified documents to Mar-a-Lago. The FBI planted them. Then he said, oh, I declassified all of the classified documents I brought to Mar-a-Lago. And then he said, I was just doing my homework, as if this guy ever reads anything. But here's the thing. It makes absolutely no difference to any of those criminal charges whether or not the documents were classified or declassified. Obviously, the most serious one is the Espionage Act. Well, the Espionage Act dates back to World War I, when there was no classification system. The modern classification system did not come into play until the Truman administration. So this whole issue of whether these documents were classified or declassified is another complete red herring. The only thing that matters is, did he take documents that belong, as you say, to the people? They should have gone to the National Archives. Did he obstruct justice by having his lawyer lie in response to a subpoena that was issued several months ago to get these documents? And do these documents, whether classified or not, implicate and threaten the national security?
And Alan Lichtman, can you discuss briefly why this is not a politically motivated search, as Mr. Trump and his allies are saying over and over again, being amplified by right-wing cable channels, but rather really a very valid search based on a warrant, as you said, approved by a judge, because there are serious potential violations of the law? So why is it consistently portrayed as politically motivated?
All three laws cited in the warrant are criminal laws. There are potentially three criminal violations of law, all of which are serious, especially the Espionage Act. And he could be charged with other crimes as well. The warrant does not limit the crimes with which he could be charged, or he could be charged with none. We don't know. This is obviously not a politically motivated search. This is the last thing that Joe Biden wanted. He just had some incredible legislative successes. You know, the Veterans Aid Act, the infrastructure bill, the bill on limited gun control, and of course, culminating in this incredible tax and climate change bill, the first major climate change bill in the country's history. He wanted to run some victory laps on that. He didn't want Donald Trump, as he always does, to take all the oxygen out of Washington, D.C., and kind of make Joe Biden a little bit irrelevant. And Joe Biden said he had no knowledge of it. And by the way, they also charged, this was done without Merrick Garland's approval. And of course, Merrick Garland, who's incredibly credible, one of the greatest federal judges we've ever had, said, yeah, I authorized this. This came from the top of the Justice Department and had absolutely nothing to do with politics.
Nonetheless, as you know, Alan Lichtman, those who are upset because they're so loyal to Trump will characterize it as a political act. So it's bad enough that the rhetoric is false, but it is inciting violence. So Mr. Trump's conspiracy theories and those echoed by several Republican lawmakers and the right-wing media are amplifying these lies that this is somehow a political event, when in fact he unlawfully took documents to the Mar-a-Lago residence. That in and of itself is very disturbing. So my question to you is, we already saw the death of somebody, a Trump supporter who raided, I believe it was an FBI office in Cincinnati, Ohio, who was out to kill the FBI, some Democratic lawmakers and Republican, particularly the two that broke with Trump. And I'm referring to Adam Kinzinger from Illinois. These people are getting death threats, and it is very serious. And some are saying, and I'll quote Democratic Congressman from California, Eric Swalwell, who says, quote, there is a straight line from Trump and then McCarthy, that's the House Minority Leader, Kevin McCarthy, that there is a direct line from their rhetoric to the calls for violence and the actual violence. So tell me, how worried should we be? And, you know, how dangerous a juncture are we in as a result?
We should be very worried. All that we are concerned about with Donald Trump, at least a lot of it has come out on this. This is quintessential Trump. Nothing is ever his fault. It's always someone else's fault. It's not his fault that he brought documents, including classified documents that could threaten our national security, to Mar-a-Lago, documents that absolutely belong to the people, not to him, and should have been submitted to the National Archives. Not his fault. It's the fault of those who got a legal search warrant to retrieve those documents. Secondly, of course, Trump, as someone said, when coming to filling the zone with lies. You put out so many lies that you're hoping the American people will just throw up their hands and say, who knows what's really going on here? Third, Trump caring only about himself and no one else. He expressed not an iota of remorse for the injuries and deaths that resulted from the January 6th insurrection, which he not only incited, but sat for 3 hours and did absolutely nothing about it, while it was Mike Pence who's desperately calling the Defense Department to try to get some help for those poor beleaguered police, the great pro-police Donald Trump. He doesn't care about anyone but himself. He doesn't care about himself inciting violence or insurrections or attacks on the police, as long as it works for him. The other thing we have to remember about Donald Trump, and I want to clear up one of the biggest red herrings in the mainstream media, and I tear my hair every time I hear this. Well, can you really prosecute Donald Trump? Because maybe he genuinely believed he lost, he won the election, and the election was rigged against him. You know, can you really prove intent? Two things here. One, it doesn't matter what he believed. O.J. Simpson truly believed that these people had taken memorabilia from him when he broke into a hotel room. Didn't matter what he believed. He committed a crime, and he got a long prison sentence for that crime. Secondly, I'll invoke the Zen phrase, unasked the question. Ordinary notions of truth and falsehood that apply to almost all of us have no meaning for Trump. Truth is totally transactional for him. It only matters what serves his purpose. So he couldn't have cared less whether it was true or not that the election was rigged. In fact, in June of 2020, before anyone cast a vote, he said, if I lose the election, I know it is rigged. That's why when one conspiracy theory gets debunked, he just jumps to another. It absolutely doesn't matter for Donald Trump. And that's also front and center on display what's going on here.
We'll take a short break and then we'll return to talk more about Donald Trump and particularly how he has changed the grand old party, the Republican Party. But first, you are listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Alan Lichtman, Distinguished Professor of History at American University. I'm Carol Castiel, and this is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available on our website at voaafrica.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter at @Carol_Castiel or connect with us on Facebook at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Well, here's a shout out to a very loyal fan, Borhan Jafar Osman from Mogadishu, Somalia. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to PCUSA@voanews.com, or you can always like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. And for Encounter this weekend, we examine the conservative majority on the U.S. Supreme Court and how it has upended decades of progress on voting and reproductive rights. Because former President Donald J. Trump was able to fill three vacancies on the High Court, his justices, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett, have been able to erode the landmark Voting Rights Act. And they recently struck down Roe v. Wade, a 50-year ruling which said abortion is a constitutional right. Analysts say this is the first time that the court has actually rescinded a constitutional prerogative. We feature two judicial experts who spar over the nature, jurisprudence, and direction of the Supreme Court. And I want to let you know, my dear listeners, that for next week's Encounter, I will be recording the program from my hometown, Newcastle, in the state of Pennsylvania, which is considered a battleground state. The Senate election in November of 2022 could decide the balance of the Senate, which is currently held by the Democrats. So it's a very important state to watch, and I look forward to bringing you all the news from both the Republican and the Democratic perspective from Western Pennsylvania. Back to our special guest, Alan Lichtman. And very briefly, Alan, we have a very good example of how the Republican Party has changed so drastically in the age of Trump, and that is the loss of Congresswoman Liz Cheney in her primary in Wyoming. She is a staunch Republican, a member of the dynastic family, you could say, the Cheney clan. Her father, of course, was vice president for 8 years under George W. Bush. He has served in other capacities. She won her congressional seat with large margins over the last several terms, except for this year, when she broke with Mr. Trump over the big lie, that is, that he somehow won the 2020 election, which, of course, he did not. notwithstanding his assertions to the contrary. So what is your assessment of this particular loss? What does it mean? And her strategy going forward with her creation of a leadership pact called The Great Task.
This loss tells you volumes about what's happened to the Republican Party. Liz Cheney is a diehard, dyed-in-the-wool, staunch conservative. There's hardly anyone in the Congress who is more conservative than Liz Cheney. So her loss had nothing to do with issues. But in fact, under Donald Trump's leadership, the Republican Party has basically abandoned its conservative principles. Limited government, fiscal responsibility, gone. Personal responsibility, personal morality, down the drain. Respect for American traditions and history, gone. All of these fundamental conservative principles don't matter anymore because the Republican Party has become a party of cultural warfare and a party determined to stay in power no matter what, no matter what kind of lies it has to tell, no matter how it might threaten the survival of our democracy. The Republican Party has simply become an organization dedicated to maintaining and staying in power. And they believe fealty to Donald Trump is the way to do that. So the loss of Cheney is indicative of a Republican Party that's no longer a party of principle, but a party of cultural warfare and a party of power. Now, don't cry for Liz Cheney. Yeah, you can be one of 435 members of Congress, and very rarely do those representatives leave their mark on history. So Cheney, and I'm sure this person who beat her will never be heard from again in history, unless she does something outrageous. But Cheney has her eye on history. She has big targets, preserving our democracy from this real threat of authoritarianism. And it's not just me. You can read any number of independent scholarly analysis saying our democracy is hanging on a thread. And I wrote a whole book about this called 13 Cracks, Preserving American Democracy After Trump. It just came out last year. So she's interested in the big picture, making a mark on history, protecting our democracy and trying, maybe futilely, to move the Republican Party back to its conservative principles. And she's, you know, still got 4 or 5 months on the January 6th committee. Her term doesn't end with this primary. So she's still got a big platform, and she's going to have a platform after she leaves the Congress. She is a major national figure, unlike the person who defeated her, whose name I can't even remember the day after the primary, to tell you the truth. And who knows, she might even run for president just to get a forum. She obviously couldn't get the Republican nomination. But boy, would I love to see a debate between Liz Cheney and Donald Trump, although I actually don't think either one of them is going to run.
Interesting. We'll talk about that as we close the program. But first, let me just ask you briefly. She, as you said, is on the January 6th committee. She's the co-chairwoman with the Democratic chair. With what she is planning to do, take her message to the people to say that this lie that the 2020 election was stolen is insidious and that no one should support election deniers, whether it's Trump or all his enablers and current lawmakers. She has, in a sense, risked her own political life, at least short term, for this greater cause. She is, in a sense, Alan Lichterman, doing Democrats' bidding, and yet she is more authentic because she is a bona fide conservative Republican criticizing her own party. How helpful is that going to be, not just for her and perhaps the party, but also for the Democrats?
Yeah, ironically, here's the staunch conservative, the daughter of Dick Cheney, the vice president of George W. Bush, who for years was the subject of Democratic scorn and Democratic attacks. And now here is Liz Cheney, in essence, putting principle above party when almost no one in her party is doing that. And yeah, I think, although that's not her main goal, I think she does help the Democrats. I think the Democrats have done an amazingly good job. And, you know, they're usually terrible at messaging, but they've been great at messaging in this January 6th committee. And they have been really smart in putting Liz Cheney, a conservative Republican, you know, part of the Cheney dynasty, although it seems to be ending like other dynasties, front and center in the television cameras. I also have to give some kudos to my own congressperson, Jamie Raskin, my former colleague at American University when he was in the law school. I think he did an amazing job as the chief impeachment manager and is incredibly articulate on the January 6th committee and other venues in explaining to us exactly what is at stake in this investigation.
Yes, Alan Lichtman, I want to talk about the Democrats in just a moment. But first, very quickly, with regard to those, whether it's the cable news, right-wing media, talk radio. And when I talk about the cable news, I'm talking about the right-wing media, Fox News, Newsmax, OAN, One American News Network. Some of our listeners may not recognize them, but they are so really out there spreading these conspiracy theories, as is social media, Twitter, Facebook, and so forth. So this is a very big challenge that the Democrats have and that anybody who believes in, I would say, objective facts, the truth is going to have. But I'm going to flip the question on its head. What about the mainstream media, in a sense, underplaying President Joe Biden's accomplishments, notwithstanding his low poll numbers? You know, we are seeing that the way they phrase President Biden's accomplishments, whether it's the signing of the Inflation Reduction Act, as you mentioned, the so-called Burn Pits Act, which is going to help our veterans, the Science and Chips Act, incredible accomplishments. And yet they talk about these things in the sense that, well, somehow they're being overshadowed by former President Trump's travails. I've heard others say that this is giving former President Trump more free publicity. And it's not to say that what President Biden has done can overcome some of the shortcomings, the way he's perceived or the Democrats, but these are incredible on the face accomplishments, and they are being framed by the mainstream media. And we're talking about, say, the liberal New York Times. How do you see that?
Yeah, if there are two words I would eliminate from the English language, those words are both sides. Somehow, and for some strange reason, the mainstream media, not entirely, but to a significant extent, seems to have abandoned its quest to find the truth and instead feel somehow it's got to give both sides, even though one side is based on lies and threats to our democracy and violence. It somehow needs to create this balance of both sides. It's not the role of the media. You know, the role of the media, how do we put it, is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable, not to give propaganda to both sides. And the coverage of Biden has been abysmal. It was way too negative in the coverage of the Afghanistan withdrawal, and it's nowhere near positive enough. What's going on with Biden and these accomplishments is historically important, and you wouldn't know it even from the mainstream media. He has achieved the greatest domestic reforms since the 1960s. We are talking about many, many decades. And this is all the more significant because we have such polarization, and he has a one-vote majority with the vice president in the Senate and a very narrow majority in the House. He has achieved historic things, even though everyone was downplaying him. And somehow the history behind this and the significance of this, you know, gets put aside because of the drama that Trump deliberately creates. He deliberately does this to get the coverage, and the mainstream media falls right into his trap. It's pretty sad.
Exactly. They are falling into his trap, which is how he got elected in part in 2016.
Very much so. You know, he hardly spent any money on ads, but in terms of the free media, the coverage, he dwarfed everybody else.
Indeed. Well, as we close, Alan Lichtman, we're coming up on the midterms, and we know that the entire House of Representatives is up for election, a third of the Senate, and the presidency, of course, is not. And we also know historically the president's party loses seats. On the other hand, despite inflation, which has dogged, of course, President Biden, but it is now seemingly coming somewhat under control, at least gas prices. Why do you think President Biden's poll numbers are still low, comparatively speaking, given that he and the Democrats have accomplished a great deal for Americans, especially over these summer months, as we just mentioned, the Inflation Reduction Act, the Gun Safety Act, the first one in 30 years, the science and chips. Do you see a trend, though, that perhaps, especially given one more thing, the overturning of Roe v. Wade by the conservative majority on the Supreme Court, could these, you know, accomplishments and that particular negative event drive Democrats to the polls and perhaps defy history? What is your sense with respect to the midterms?
Yeah, objectively, the conditions do look bad for Democrats. Joe Biden's poll numbers are low. People are still unhappy about you can't remember. There's always a lag between the statistical change in the economy and accomplishments by a president and movements in the approval ratings. These things don't turn over overnight, although we have seen some uptick in Biden's approval rating. But I think in many ways, the Republicans seem convinced to snatch defeat out of the jaws of victory. You're absolutely right about the Dobbs decision. Well, it has motivated Democrats, not just Democrats, independents and moderate Republicans, like nothing else. You know, a woman's right to control her own reproduction is one of the most fundamental of all human rights. And never before in the history of this country has the Supreme Court actually taken away constitutional right. This is huge. Look at Kansas, a deep red state, 59% to 41% voted pro-choice in Kansas. That's just incredible. The other thing is, it now looks like, I believe, the Democrats will hold the Senate and maybe even expand a bit in the Senate because you have these ridiculous Republican candidates, Herschel Walker in Georgia, Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania, J.D. Vance in Ohio. Ohio's a place Republicans should win in a cakewalk. But the last poll I saw, Vance was 10 points behind his Democratic opponent. So things are certainly looking up in the Senate. It's going to be very tough for Democrats to hold on to the House. I wouldn't bet on it, but given the headwinds that are now favoring the Democrats and blowing in the face of Republicans, it's not absolutely impossible. Final point I want to make before I have to go is about 2024. And again, the mainstream media is way off base. You know, one of the reasons they were so wrong about 2016 was they have no theory about how presidential elections really work. Like my theory, the keys to the White House, that has been right since 1984. So they're basically making predictions off the top of their head. And you hear all this commentary, oh my God, Biden is terrible, shouldn't run again. You know, someone else should take over the Democratic Party in 2024. I'm not going to comment on his age and health. I'm simply going to say this. My system, the 13 keys to the White House that's been right for 40 years, works this way. These are keys that gauge the strength and performance of the White House party. And if they lose six keys, that's Biden and the Democrats, they're out. One of the keys is incumbency. So Biden doesn't run, you lose the incumbency key. Another key is internal party fight. Biden doesn't run, there's no heir apparent. You're going to get a huge internal party fight. So leaving everything else aside, looking at the hard politics, if Biden doesn't run, the Democrats are down right away two keys. It'd only take four more keys for them to lose. If he does run again, they're not down either of those two keys, and it would take six keys for them to win. So take, you know, all of this punditry with a gigantic boulder of salt.
Very interesting. I need to ask you one more quick question before I let
really
you go,
quick,
Alan. You predicted Donald Trump's victory in 2016 and his impeachment, at least the first one. You were right on both counts. Are you willing to make a prediction regarding a possible criminal indictment, either in connection with his role in inciting the January 6th insurrection in an attempt to halt the peaceful transfer of power and keep his grip on power despite his loss? What do you think?
Don't have a system for predicting this. I don't have a system for predicting impeachment, but that was based on my careful study of Donald Trump and history. So take this for what it's worth. It's not based on my system, but I think he's in legal jeopardy in so many different places for so many different reasons, not just in the Department of Justice, but also in Atlanta in the investigation by the DA there. I think somehow, somewhere, one of these indictments is going to come through.
Alan Lichtman is Distinguished Professor of History at American University. Thank you so much for your terrific insights, Alan. And don't forget to tune in next week for my special edition of Encounter, where I will be broadcasting from Pennsylvania, talking to Democratic and Republican leaders in the battleground state. Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.